Heavier. Von der rechten Attention. Heidegger reserves the title of Proust for a so-called Proust occurrence, Wahrheitsgeschehen, which no longer has anything to do with a validity claim transcending or claiming to transcend space and time. The truths emerging in the plural, the truths of this centralized wishful philosophy are in each case provincial and yet total. They are more like the imperative utterance or expression of some sacral force fitted out with the aura of truth. Now, of course, already in time and being, the world's project disclosive of meaning, which is inscribed in the totality of a linguistic worldview, if you have Humboldt in mind, or inscribed in the grammar of a language game, if you refer to Wittgenstein, has been detached from any critical court of appeal. This is also true already for time and being. The luminous force of the world no longer needs to stand the test of the resistance of those entities over which it has been superordinated. Now, this dimension, I will explain it now, and I hope in a bit more graspable words. That dimension of concealedness, prior to propositional truth, after time and being, passes over from the conscientious project of the individual Dasein, concerned about his existence, to an anonymous dispensation of being that is contingent, although it is predetermining the very concrete course of history. So the famous term comes down to the fact that Heidegger outfits the meta-historical authority of a primordial force set aflow in time with the attribute of being an occurrence of truth. The very concept, let me explain this, the very concept of the history of being, Seinsgeschichte, depends on an operation which is as essential as, I think, dubious. Heidegger gains his notion of truth occurrence, oder Wahrheitsgeschehen, by first transferring the meaning of propositional truth, which can correctly be attributed to propositions and assertory sentences. He transfers this to the linguistic conditions enabling these sentences to be either true or false. This displacement allows for a second operations. Heidegger bestows the historical change in meaning-disclosing linguistic frames with a truth-guaranteeing authority. And this move, I think, confuses meaning and validity to an extent that all claims to validity inherent in the cognitive and communicative use of language are just instrumentalized for the one and overarching function of language, namely to disclose the world. To disclose the world, to disclose the meaning of something is confounded with saying something that is valid or not. This step, I think, which has been thoroughly analyzed by my friend Ernst Tumenthal and also by Carlotto Apel. This step is so bereft of, internally, I think, of plausibility, that it cannot be explained, I think, satisfactorily in terms of the internal theoretical development discussed up to this point. The transition from the philosophy of time and being, being in time, I'm sorry, sein und sein, being in time, to, I know that this confusion is very important, so please, I'm only referring to the title of the book. The transition from the philosophy of being in time to the temporalized Ursprungsphilosophy of the later period is in fact linked by some texts which never have been taken seriously as a possible link in philosophical argument. In spite of their sheer political function, these texts between 1933 and 1935 do mark a shift in argument which is interesting and reveals that position from which Heidegger, I think, in fact, took his turn. Now, I won't refer to this very interesting interpretation. I can refer to it in the discussion if you really want to. Of this very philosophically very interesting use of the whole framework of being and time for national revolutionary purposes. And the major shift in use is that Dasein is now attributed to the existence no longer of individual human beings, but to the existence, the political existence of a people or a nation. And only from this national revolutionary reading of being and time, and not from the existentialist reading, Heidegger took off for his later philosophy, and that might yield to an external interpretation of this transition, which, to my analysis so far, cannot consistently explain on internal terms. Now, let me just finish by returning to our general context. Where does Heidegger, with his later philosophy, end up in this context of a critique of modernity and an overcoming of Occidental rationalism as its most significant ontological feature? In their attempts to overcome the philosophy of the subject, Hegel and Marx had yet been captured in the horizon of this same philosophy. This cannot be said about Heidegger. What can be said about Heidegger is, however, that he never freed himself from the very problematics posited by Husserl as the last exponent of the philosophy of the subject. Heidegger can burst the conceptual cage of the philosophy of consciousness in no other way than what Hegel would have called abstract negation. Heidegger, that is to say, remains attached to the foundationalism, however inverted, of the philosophy of consciousness. In the introduction to What is Metaphysics, he compares philosophy with a tree that branches out into the sciences and itself grows out of the main root of metaphysics. The thorough recall or remembering of being that is promulgated does not call into question the foundationalist starting point, I quote, to speak in images, it does not tear out the root of philosophy, it digs up the ground and plows the soil for it. So my thesis would be, Heidegger passes beyond the horizon of the philosophy of consciousness, only to stay in its shadows. This twilight position has, in our context, three more or less interesting consequences, which I am going to state at the very end plainly. First, since the close of the 18th century, the discourse of modernity has had a single theme under ever new titles, namely the withering and the fading away of forces of social integration. In short, the deformation of a one-sidedly rationalized everyday praxis that evokes the need for something equivalent to the previously unifying power of religion. What Hegel had called the need for philosophy was transformed from Schlegel until Nietzsche into the need for a new mythology. But only Heidegger vaporized this concrete need by ontologizing it and foundationalizing it into a being which is withdrawn from beings. Through this shift, Heidegger makes unrecognizable both the origin of this need in the pathologies of an ambiguously rationalized life law, and avant-garde art as the experiential source for the radicalized critique of reason. Heidegger inciphers the palpable distortions of everyday communicative practices into an impossible fate of being administered by philosophers. A second consequence and further implication of Heidegger's later philosophy is that the critique of modernity is made independent of scientific and historical analysis. His essential thinking renounces all empirical and all normative questions that can be treated in argumentative form. Abstract insights into essences are thus spread out within an unreflected horizon of prejudices of bourgeois culture critique. I know about what I am talking. Heidegger's critical judgments, for instance, on Das Mann, on the dictatorship of the public realm, and on the impotence of the private sphere, on technocracy and mass civilization. This whole critique is without any originality whatever, because this critique belongs to a repertoire of opinions typical of a certain generation of German mandarins in the 20s. Thirdly, and finally, because being withdraws itself from analysis, because it can only be encircled and silenced in indirect discourse, the destinies of being remain indiscoverable and, of course, unpredictable. The speech about being is without direct propositional content, while it spreads the illocutionary sense of demanding resignation to a fate. Its practical political side consists in the perlocutionary effect of a diffuse readiness to obey to an auretic but diffuse authority. The rhetoric of the later Heidegger compensates for the propositional content that is missing and that the text itself actively refuses. It attunes and trains in addresses in their dealings with some sort of no longer identifiable and nameable sacred powers. To be sure, the empty formula of thoughtful recalling, remembering of being can also be filled in with quite a different attitudinal syndrome. For example, with the anarchist demand for a subversive stance of refusal, which corresponds more to present moods than does blind submission to something superior. But I think as long as one retains the whole categorical frame of Heidegger's late philosophy, one should see that the arbitrariness with which the same thought figures can be given contemporary actualization remains somehow, at least for me, irritating. Thank you very much.